not, I think that the role of those that are elected to positions throughout government, I'm not just speaking of the Portland City Council, but I gave the same kinds of remarks when I was in the legislature. I have a very worn copy of the Federalist Papers I would often take and quote from on the floor of either the Senate or the House, reminding people that when the man who is known as the father of the Constitution, James Madison, and the fourth president of the United States, authored along with Alexander Hamilton and John Jay what are now known as the Federalist Papers, they spoke to the issue of representative form of government and dismissed direct kinds of democracies because of the, as they characterize, demagoguery that can occur when you don't have a representative kind of democracy as they ended up proposing and has been adopted throughout the United States. Thus, I take this responsibility carefully, and I don't for a moment try to shift my my role here to the voters or anybody else. I think it's very important that I exercise my responsibility to vote on any subject based on the merits of the subject. And so I hope nobody is offended that I've taken that position. I think it's a time-honored position. I would also just conclude by just mentioning one thing that was said, that the current system is difficult to navigate, and I would agree with that. And if you don't think that that's true, I challenge you to pick up the blue pages and find where you go to complain about a barking dog, or where you go to file a complaint about a neighbor that is too noisy. It is very difficult to figure out, and I would absolutely agree with that. But if this is a difficult system to navigate, I will tell you that, in my opinion, the form of government being proposed would be impenetrable to navigate, and that I think good parts of the Portland system are that while you do bring some inefficiency, and I think one needs to concede that, you also bring a tremendous level of personalized service to the citizenry, and I hear that a lot from all five of the people that you see sitting up here, and it just happens to be us five now. That's a very consistent Portland theme, I think, that I very much value and appreciate. So, again, I'm voting to accept this report, nothing more at this point, and I appreciate the good work. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, Commissioner Leonard, a lot of times when people have those types of questions, they call my office because I'm the Commissioner of Public Affairs.
Inappropriately so.
One of the anachronisms of our city charter is we each have titles. I'm Commissioner of Public Affairs. Somebody's Commissioner of Public Safety, Public Utilities. So I think, you know, the point is, I think that, you know, this commission deserves a lot of credit for taking the time to really look at ways, important areas of the charter. I mean, the titles we're stuck with forever aren't part of your agenda, and I'm willing to let that lay for now. But I think you've come on some very important recommendations. And, you know, as I said earlier, I have a hard time reconciling why this conversation can't be open to our entire electorate. Why should it only exist in the 26 members of the Charter Commission or the 5 members of this city council? And keep everybody else out of it. I can't conceive of any circumstance under which I would be doing my duty if I didn't deliver the option to voters. And I've learned, you know, we just went through the most boring campaign around to reform the FPDNR, Fire, Police, Discipline, Retirement System, and 82% of the voters resounded on an issue that is very hard to connect with. I think that the only way you're going to get people to engage and connect is not through more process. You know, 26 volunteers have given us enough of their time over the last 14 months. We need to get it before the voters, and nothing will focus voters' attention and the media's attention on what the substance of these changes are than an election deadline. And I think it's time for us to move ahead, thank this committee for what they've done, all the good work, and to set them free. So, The job now becomes ours, and our job, I think, is to include the people who put us here in this office. Aye.
Sten?
Well, Chair Wong and your commission, thank you again. And I actually enjoy going back and forth with you, and I could do more, and I'm sure we will. I think it's a very good discussion, and as you can imagine, I'm pleased to accept this report, and we'll be voting yes to accept it. I think that's the proper step, next step. And I'm going to be thinking a lot about this between now and February 7th, and I just think I'll take a couple of minutes and outline what I'll be thinking about. The substance of all four recommendations, and I do intend to view all four of them separately. I do disagree with some of my colleagues, and that's the beauty of having a democracy where you elect different people. Even in a city where there's a fair amount of political agreement, it's the details and the bird's eye view that lead to different points of view. And that's in part why I like this form of government. I think you have a scrutiny on each of the departments by somebody who is directly accountable to the voters that is frankly lacking in most cities. I do disagree passionately with even the inference that Portland isn't outperforming other cities. I believe we are. I was criticized by some for campaigning very hard last spring on an argument that was optimistic and positive and based on our results. And I think your argument against our system, I think the burden on change is on those who want change. And I don't think you've met that burden if you read the text of your report. It's very, very light on the argument. It's a theoretical argument. It's a worthy one. You worked hard on it, but I don't think you've made the case. And so that leads me to the dilemma that I face, which is I don't think all voters will get that nuance if I vote to send it out. I believe they will hear that I voted to send it to them and will believe that therefore I endorse it. And I think the mixed message sounds much like a candidate I voted for, John Kerry, saying I was for the war and now I'm against it. And so I think that in order to perform my duty, it's not a simple matter. And I've shared this with you, and I think it's intellectual difficult decision, and I welcome feedback. I'd welcome conversations. I'd welcome letters. I'd be very interested in talking with people who don't share this view, which is why I'm trying to lay it out there very clearly. I think that the way our system works now, I may support, I'm still thinking about it. I said at the front end that I didn't think it was quite put together right, but I may support having an ongoing charter review commission sent out that has some power to go past us, but that's not what exists now. And the way everything is set up, I have to make an affirmative decision whether or not to send anything to the ballot. And I don't ever recall a circumstance where an elected official used that power to send out something they think is a bad idea. I don't recall it, and I don't think this is a good idea that you brought forward, although I respect your work. And so I've got to wrestle with that and think through whether or not. And I do have, good or bad, biased or not, a fair amount of experience to base my opinion on the system on. I've worked in it for a long time. I've been in charge of one of the worst debacles in the city's history, and I've been in charge of some of its successes, and I've worked closely with mayors and commissioners throughout the years and have a great sense of where the buck stops. And I don't know where it stops under your system, and I don't agree with the quick argument that it will be easy to attach accountability. When you have one person overseeing all of the managers and hiring, firing them, I find that a situation that's very easy to avoid accountability. The CAO in the system that you're proposing can hire and fire all managers at will. They will decide that is who they will cater to, and I don't get how that CAO is more accountable to the citizens through the mayor. I just don't get that. I do get that it's more efficient. I get that. I don't argue with that. I think you're going to pay a big cost for that efficiency, and I don't think the argument that it's more efficient and more accountable holds up. So you're not going to convince me on this forum, but I am open to continue the debate about whether or not I should refer this. I'm much more supportive of referring the other pieces, but I need to think about some of the comments that have been brought up today. And it was not in any way, shape, or form a way of trying to undermine whether or not you get to this ballot when I ask the public process questions. I get a vote on whether it gets to the ballot. I don't need to evade anything or get there. It's that in my experience, final proposals are improved through public debate and time. I've never seen a final proposal that didn't improve with the process. And where I disagree strongly with my friend Commissioner Saltzman is, even if only those 15 people show up, if they're the 15 people who dig in and make positive suggestions, you might get a better ballot measure if we don't take 2 weeks from publication. Let's give the generous timeline, 2 weeks from publication and 3 weeks till referral. As soon as that referral happens, there will be political action committees formed on both sides. We all know this. I know which interests will fund which side, and they will start working on soundbite measures. That's the way Measure 37 was waged. That's the way this one's going to be waged. The time you debate things is before it goes to the ballot if you want to improve the product. And I believe through nobody's fault and through good work on everybody's part, you've pushed up against an agenda that that simply does not leave a lot of time for that. That really does not affect me substantively. I can make this decision and stand by it in terms of referral, but I do think you will engender several no votes in this room that I think actually might be yes votes, knowing what the people think, because it's a yes-no proposition without those symbolic 15 people having a chance to improve it. And I think that's a process mistake on the part of the proponents of this. So I look forward to working with each of you. I am proud of this city. I just can't buy the argument that because we can pull out a ranking by the Milken Institute that we're 97th on something, when we're one of the only AAA rated cities in the country of this size. That is a backing by the bond community that it goes right to management. AAA rating is based 100% on management abilities. Very few cities have it. We have it. We're ranked very, very well on all kinds of fronts. So the proposition that the system is broken only argues that we would be that much further ahead of the pack if we had a different system. And it's hard to buy that. It's hard to buy that we have done better than most places despite having a bad system. It defies human experience, and frankly, we're not that much better than everyone else that we survived despite being having one leg in handcuffs. I do, however, want to end by saying that my faith in Portland, my belief in this city, and all that has preceded, and the very small role I've played in it, and all of you have played in it as individuals, is much bigger. I think whatever form of government we have, Portland will be the best place in the world to live as far as I'm concerned. I don't fear the vote, but I'm going to take my job, which I was elected to do, as to whether to refer it much more seriously than a Pollyannish argument that I should just refer it. That's not my job. But I do think should this pass at the ballot, Portland would continue to prosper as it has in the past, and I thank all of you for your work. Aye.
Potter.
I've enjoyed the discussion. Because this is exactly what we want, is this kind of discussion in the public arena. If the Charter Commission had not been put together, we wouldn't be having this discussion. I think that's important for everybody to recognize. They were thoughtful. They did engage the public. All meetings were public and televised. And they did outreach in addition to the other things. When this group formed, I realized that we were putting together a very capable group of people that would do public process, that would be thoughtful, and come up with recommendations that should be taken to the voters so that they could make those decisions. If on February 7th we decide to send this to the voters, there will be 4 months of discussion in this community. And that, as been stated in some of the testimony, this is not the first time that a ballot measure about the form of government has gone forward. But this is the first time that the city in over 80 years has looked at the entire charter from top to bottom. And so I think we're going to have some very good discussion on February 7th. I'd ask you all to come back and make your cases so that the community watching this can decide for themselves. So I want to thank particularly David Wong. I thought your presentation was excellent, and your responses were measured, and I appreciate that. I appreciate the work of this committee, the advisory committee. I appreciate all the folks who came here to testify. So I look forward to February 7th, and I vote aye. We'll take a 5-minute break.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to begin the next portion of our city council meeting. I think I hear. Okay, Commissioner Leonard.
Take your time.
The sitting in your seat applies to you as well.
Take your time, Randy. We have all night.
City Council will come to order. We don't have to call the roll again. Please read the... Well, actually, we may have to because we don't have the same number.
We are missing somebody.
Okay.
No. Adams?
Please read. Go ahead.
Do you want me to do the roll?
Go ahead. Please call.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman? Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Here. Please read the 3:30 time certain.
Agenda item 64, adopt the recommendation to change the city business license law to encourage growth of small businesses, reduce tax burden inequities between large and small businesses, and better tie city services provided to taxes received and preserve the financial health of the city.
Mr. Adams.
Thank you, Mayor Potter. Some of you have endured the 103 PowerPoint presentation that Warren and I put together, and I sometimes wonder we've made progress on this by threatening to show it over and over and over again to as many people as we could. We are going to, for the record, because it has not been aired out publicly on the record, do a truncated version of the background information and research on this, but we will go very fast.
For the record, my name is Warren Jimenez, and I work for Commissioner Sam Adams.
So this is a discussion of potential changes to the city's business license fee, sometimes referred to as the BIT, which is the county acronym for the business income tax. The proposal before council consideration today is to increase the owner's compensation deduction to $80,000, to raise the gross receipts exemption, to institute a progressive minimum tax based on employees' gross revenues in Portland or a combination of both.
So what is the BLF? I think a lot of you know that this question, the answer to this question. With some exemptions, the City of Portland's business license fee law requires anyone doing the business within the city boundary to first obtain a license and pay a fee. The estimated fee is actually based on net income generated within the City of Portland. The BLF, in some form or another, has started since the city was incorporated in 1854. They were rolled up into one business license fee in 1975, and the change was to assess based on the net income.
Four quick slides to just give folks a little bit of the profile. We are a community of entrepreneurs and small businesses. 94% of all firms are 50 employees or less in Multnomah County. The most prevalent attributes of the businesses in our community, they are sole proprietor in terms of how they're organized. They bring in terms of reported income, bring in less than $200,000 gross. Most of their revenues are derived from sales within the city. And the number one business category is an acronym called FIRE, which is insurance, financial insurance and real estate. Business gross receipts in, 2 perceptions stand in the way of this discussion about business taxes and business tax reform. One is Portland's BLF makes it unfriendly to do business versus Oregon has the lowest business taxes in the United States. This is a story from November 8, 2005, on the front page of the Portland Tribune that talked about a number of firms leaving the city. We were, with the thanks of the folks at the Bureau of Revenue, able to go in and dig out new information, but we also have the information available that has been available for some time, and Warren will go over that in a minute.
There's also some good things here and some contradictory things in this ranking by Forbes. Forbes, as far as best places to do business, Portland ranks 20th out of 200. But taking a look at the next slide there, and again, this is the Portland metro area. You see we do well in some areas and not so good in other areas. One of the areas that we do well in is the cost of doing business, which we rank 8th, versus kind of the income growth, where we rank 181st out of 200. Eco Northwest did a study in 2004 that addressed the issue of the business license fee and the BIT. And some of the conclusions that came out of that study are noted on here. That the first one is that local taxes on businesses and owners creates an incentive for small, closely held, highly profitable firms to locate outside of Multnomah County. And then one of the other conclusions that they made as well is that our professional service firms pay a large share of Portland and Multnomah County's business income tax. Now, it's interesting when you take a look at the business license fee and compare it to some of our surrounding jurisdictions, you can see that some of our surrounding jurisdictions are actually a true fee. For example, Beaverton assesses a $50 fee, plus they add a per-employee fee based on the size of the business you are. And then also, taking a look at Vancouver, it's a $125 flat fee, which is just right across the state line, of course.
So again, because of new computer system and new approaches in the Bureau of Revenue, we were able to answer the question, are businesses fleeing Portland in great numbers? The last complete tax year where all the data is available is 2004. It's a useful year to look at, given that 2004 was at the bottom trough of the national recession. In 2004, there were 661 accounts that were closed because of either ceased business, moved business out of Portland but stayed in the Tri-County area, closed the Portland location, but they left other multiple locations open. Actually, a total of 1,208 economists that we worked with said, in terms of judging the city's business climate, the shaded boxes are the ones that you should hold a local government accountable for. At 661 businesses closed, about 2% of the total accounts, which are 34,631, a loss of BLF revenue of $368,417. However, the numbers don't show that businesses are fleeing the city in great numbers. Actually, in 2004, there was a net positive increase in BLF accounts of 2,000 new accounts. However, while that's good news, we are not keeping pace in terms of job growth with the region, and we are not keeping pace in terms of earning growth with the region either. On the issue of Oregon has the lowest taxes in the United States, the facts are that are the following.
So I think we've all seen this headline published in the Oregonian, Oregon tax burden drifting away from corporations. And actually, this was a study completed by the council on the state taxation, which represents big business. And in terms of state tax, Oregon was the lowest. Another source, which was Ernst & Young, did this study on change in business taxes over a three-year period, and it showed that Oregon actually didn't change at all over that three-year period.
So one way to describe this is Oregon is one of the best states in terms of state business tax burdens, but Portland has a very unique business, local city business tax compared to other cities in the state and in Southwest Washington. What is a business? Any person can form a legal business entity and will be treated for tax purposes as something separate from those that own that entity.
And there are six different entity types: a sole proprietor, a C corp, an S corp, a couple different partnerships. You can have a general partnership and then limited partnership, and also one of the newest forms of an entity is limited liability company. And one of the reasons why a business may choose one versus another, there are kind of three areas that they consider while making that choice. One is to limit the liability, so to the extent to which they can claim against the business entity type and can claim against the owners of the business entity. Also control the business entity, who makes those decisions within that entity, and taxation the entity's income. In other words, how many layers of taxation occurs between the income and the income that's distributed to the owners. So the choice, depending on which entity that you choose, has a significant impact on how the tax liability is hit on your business. Also, why do some businesses pay the minimum business license fee? As you know, right now, currently, it's $100. But there are two main reasons why. The first is due to apportionment. That means if a business operates in Portland, but all of their gross receipts are generated from outside of Portland, then they would not pay on these gross receipts. And the second reason why is if a business does not generate a net profit, they're in loss, actually.
So in terms of looking at what is a fair tax, there are two principles that are mentioned most often. These are definitions from the General Accounting Office that taxpayer with the ability to pay more tax should be taxed more, the progressive tradition of taxes, and taxpayers that benefit most from services paid for by the tax should be taxed more. So we did an analysis of both of these tax fairness principles. Again, I'd like to thank the Bureau of Revenue for this, and there were some surprises. One is that there are around 1,000 businesses that gross over $20 million a year that pay $100 in tax. That means that Mike Roach's clothing store pays a lot more money than, in his business license fee, I suspect, than over 1,000 businesses that gross over $20 million. And you see that there are about 2,600 businesses that gross more than $1 million that pay that $100. At the other end of the spectrum is the fact that there are just over 100 businesses that pay well over $50,000. In fact, these 100-odd businesses pay about 41% of the entire BLF tax burden for the city. So we've got some that pay very little that are high-grossing, and then we have some businesses that pay a lot. Second principle of tax fairness, those that receive more of the benefits should be taxed more. There is, we used as a proxy for this, and everything has its strengths and weaknesses. This was based in terms of accuracy of the data. This data was collected during the 2003 survey of businesses and matched to accounts filing for tax year 2004. And you see, as was mentioned in the earlier slide for from Eco Northwest, that when you look at the number of FTE employees collected with the survey based on the amount that industry category pays, that indeed professional services pay per employee a very high amount, followed by healthcare. Remember, nonprofits do not pay the BLF in the city of Portland, so these are doctors and healthcare professionals, not the hospitals, and then you see the list go down from there. So in terms of the change options that I heard from my colleagues, that I heard in the community, and the list could grow a lot longer, but these are the ones that we dug in and looked at and did some analysis on. We'll go quickly through them for the record. The first one was to eliminate the tax. Currently, the city gets $53 million due to BLF proceeds. If you were to eliminate the tax, that would eliminate about 16% of the general fund. The positive impact of that is that money would go into taxpayer pockets. The negative impacts of this, I think, are best stated by the Eco Northwest report that said that you could eliminate this tax completely and you would only pick up roughly 1,500 jobs in the next 5 years, which a cost per job created is, this is a very inefficient inefficient result, and that assumes that we could keep services the same, that we could get the level of services the same. Well, like a lot of my colleagues up here, you know, we don't want to be defensive about these things. This just shows the general fund and where the other revenue has come from for the city. The next slide shows, and we're always looking to be becoming more efficient. This does look at city FTEs per 1,000, and it shows that we've become, there are fewer FTEs per 1,000, and the line bar graphs show that we've remained relatively stable in terms of our FTE per 1,000 population. There are other things you can look at.
Another option is that we took a look at is just kind of reducing the tax across the board. And again, one of the positive things is that kind of any business who pays more than minimum will pay less, so everyone will get a piece of it. However, in terms of real dollars, it focuses the benefit on the largest payers, if you take a look at that and calculated that out.
The other thing we heard, the other group of businesses we heard from were a lot of startup businesses. Warren and I have been out to see probably 180 businesses thus far in the last 2 years. And we heard a lot of startup businesses that would prefer that they be left alone until they get to a bigger size than $25,000 gross. And so one option we looked at, and I'm proposing today, is to raise the current exemption level from $25,000 to $50,000. And the benefits of that are that we leave folks alone, and the negatives are this does cost money out of the general fund, but I think this is also consistent with the fact that we are still one of the number one destinations for 18 to 34-year-olds, and if you've read Richard Florida's Creative Class, a lot of those are entrepreneurs.
Part of the proposal that's in front of City Council today is increasing the owner's compensation deduction, and the level that's being considered for today for immediately is 80,000. What was on the table before is up to 125, and that's with the scenarios that are played out here. Again, this is another way of taking a look at this issue. If you were to play out the increase of the owner's compensation to 125 and taking a look at those impacts and where those investments would be targeted, 59% of those businesses employ 50 or less. Of course, again, the negative impact would be to the general fund.
We also looked at how to address some of those 2,600 businesses of gross revenues greater than $1 million and 1,000 businesses with gross revenues greater than $20 million that are currently paying $100. And what we looked at was a progressive or tiered minimum tax. The positives of this, the general fund will have more revenues to underwrite the cost of tax reform or the tax rollbacks, targeted tax rollbacks. It will mean potentially for those businesses that now pay $100 that they would be paying more in the future. Because we don't currently collect this information on our business tax forms, it will take a year it will take a tax year to collect all this information along with the gross receipts in Portland. So again, the proposal is to increase the owner's compensation deduction to $80,000 and $125,000 within the next 5 years, to raise the gross receipts exemption to $50,000, to institute a progressive minimum tax based on one of these or combination of these three factors.
So what are the impacts here? We'll take a look at these real quick. The cost of doing the first two items of the proposal, of raising the owner's compensation and the gross receipts exemption, is $3 million to the general fund. And I'll quickly just kind of highlight some of the things on the next few charts that are part of this summary chart here. Taking a look at this is based on increasing those two things or making those two changes, the majority of impacts in terms of entity types, sole proprietors are the bigger winners here. You can see the positive impacts are approximately 13,500 business or business license fee accounts. Of those accounts, approximately 7,000 positively impact the sole proprietors. Also taking a look at this and referring back to the Eco Northwest study, professional services paying the majority or the largest share of the business license fee making these two changes, the biggest change in terms of estimated reduction in terms of dollars affects the professional services.
So why this proposal? It focuses tax cuts on the most mobile, owner-controlled businesses, the entrepreneurs in the city of Portland, sole proprietors. It balances tax cuts with the impacts on basic services to the city. It reduces the tax burden and the red tape for startup firms. It better matches the principles of fair tax. $20 million company who pay very little versus the small businesses who pay a lot, and professional service firms that show up in terms of tax paid per FTE will see a significant decrease. Implementation. Increase the owner's compensation deduction to $80,000 in this fiscal year. 07-08, next fiscal year. Bureau of Revenue will collect the employee and gross receipts data. The data will be used for phase two of this, where we'll be coming back with a discussion on the progressive minimum fee. In fall 07, we will take that information out on the road for additional comment and feedback. And then winter of 07, council will consider the progressive minimum fee. There are a number of people I want to thank. Again, Terry Williams, Sue Klobertanz, and the Bureau of Revenue, Tim Grew before he left, the Alliance of Portland Neighborhood Businesses, Small Business Advisory Council, the Portland Business Alliance, the East Portland Chamber of Commerce, Drew Barden, Karosh, Amanda, Jennifer, a whole bunch of people have been very, very important parts of this public-private partnership. And if it's okay with you, Mayor, unless anyone has any questions of me, we have some invited testimony.
Okay.
If I could have John Tapagna, Sho DeZona, and Mike Roach, please come up.
Who wants to start?
Hi, I'm John Taponia. I'm a managing director with Echo Northwest, a Portland-based economic consulting firm. And as you can tell from Commissioner Adams' presentation, we have done a number of studies on the business license fee and the business income tax in Multnomah County over the course of the last several years. In the commissioner's wisdom, that they did not commission a new study this time because we'd done so much work on it in the past. So in good Portland tradition, we're recycling some of our conclusions, or I will recycle my conclusions today. I think there are really two key conclusions that were alluded to here that I would reiterate as you think about a position on the proposal. First of all, the one on equity. The work that we did in February of 2003 as the city was considering a transition to a mix of a payroll tax and the current structure, we did do a number of analyses there and discovered what was reiterated here today, that there are some industrial sectors where taxes paid as a share of number of employees or taxes paid as a share of payroll stands out relative to other industries. And the reason that that happens is that there are some industries in the city that have a large presence and a lot of activity, but they do most of their sales outside of the city and therefore apportion out the tax and therefore pay a relatively low tax relative to the activity that they have in this city. So the proposed changes, both the increase in the owner's deduction and the minimum tax together, make a move toward improving equity relative to current law. I think the second major point is simply an overall comment on the relative importance of taxes in a business location decision. Echo's position, having looked at this numerous times, both in Portland and in other places, is that overall, we would argue that taxes matter, but they are a second-tier decision in a business location decision. More important, obviously, are labor quality and labor costs, natural assets in the area, good transportation networks, access to clients and markets, and the like. Those are all first-tier. However, if taxes differ within a region, as they do in Portland, then someone who is looking where they want to locate within a region has the same access to most of those first-tier decision criteria. They have the same access to labor quality and costs. They have similar access to transportation networks and to markets, et cetera. So then they go down and they look at the second-tier criteria like taxes and see if those differ. And so consequently, if you have a tax structure that differs significantly within a region, and Portland does with the business license fee and the BIT, it can make a difference and it can impact the location decisions for those affected firms. So by creating some modest reductions here, you should expect a modest stimulus to job growth in the Portland area. So I think it the proposal wins on two points, both on equity and then a modest stimulus effect with the reduction.
Thank you, John.
Sean Ozono.
Could you explain to the
public? Yes, I am. I am just for you, challenged with your eyesight. It does not say I'm buff. It says I'm for buff, although I am buff.
Oh, I'm glad you explained that. I thought it said I'm buff.
So you're not here to promote.
For business, United for fair fees. Thank you, Sam. Sheldon Ozono, owner of Osmond Travel Service and several other businesses that are very happy to be in Portland, and I do believe we pay taxes because I am on the corporate structure. For disclosure, I do have more than 150 employees in the city of Portland, so I am on the minority side of the business. I'm no longer a small business. My father-in-law started a business back in 1949, and we've been fortunate to grow their business to the size we are. We operate in three states and 12 locations. Most of our biggest customers are across the country, not necessarily located here in Portland, but we do generate the revenue here in Portland. So City of Portland does benefit with the fact that I pay a significant amount of taxes. As long as I'm profitable, I'm more than happy to be paying taxes. So full disclosure, there's no agenda for me personally, I would not benefit. I may be paying more taxes in the future. So the exemptions on either personal or the corporate side has no benefit to me personally. So I just want to make sure that, although I've been involved in business for over three decades in Portland, I've served on many civic and boards, but I did serve, I continue to serve on the Business Alliance, Portland Business Alliance Board. I was the former Portland Chamber of Commerce. I was chair several years back. So I have been engaged in business and have been looking at this whole controversy about the small business, taxes on small business. And I'm here just to simply support a fair and balanced tax for the small businesses. And I want to echo John's comment that if there's any way to stimulate and change the perception that Portland is unfriendly to business, I think we need to do all we can, because the future of our city and economy does depend on the new creative, new talent that's coming into this our city. And if we can stimulate that portion to come to our city and to begin small business, as our firm started as very small business. When I joined the firm, there were four travel agents. I had 250 employees throughout three states. And so I want to thank, you know, City of Portland for allowing us to be successful, but you do want to encourage the entrepreneurs who are the small business, which is backbone of our economy. So
thank you,
Sean. You know, just make that statement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mike Roach, Honorable Mayor Potter, and distinguished commissioners. Having sat here so many times to ask for your support for tax increases and funding our public schools, I must admit it feels quite out of character to be thanking you for a proposed tax decrease. So I want to first express my deep appreciation to each of you for your unfailingly consistent courage and commitment to our city's public schools. This resolution reflects a similar courage and commitment to our city's small business community. Increasing the BLF owner's compensation deduction from $60,000 to $80,000 now and eventually to $125,000, and doubling the BLF gross receipts exemption from $25,000 to $50,000 sends a critically important message to our city's small, locally owned independent businesses. That message is, we want you to succeed, and we are putting actual dollars behind our words. The resolution effectively represents an investment by the city in over 13,000 small businesses, most of whom are locally owned and independent. Given that up to 300% more money stays in our local economy when it is spent with locally owned businesses, I predict this resolution will yield an excellent return on the city's investment while at the same time enhancing Portland's distinctiveness, one of business guru Michael Porter's four criteria for a successful 21st century city. As a board member of the Sustainable Business Network of Portland, as president of the Hillsdale Business and Professional Association, and a member of the APMBA, I would like to conclude by reading a short passage from Stacy Mitchell's new book, Big Box Swindle: The True Cost of Mega Retailers and the Fight for America's Independent Businesses. Now, this is a good passage. The ugly truth that the decline of independent businesses and the rise of the big boxes has been fueled by government policy, which has championed, fostered, and financed chain store expansion. In a country that values fairness and independence, this is a troubling realization. It is, however, in one respect, good news. It suggests that locally owned businesses are not the inherently antiquated and obsolete entities that some make them out to be. In fact, given the uphill terrain they have faced, we might well conclude that the remarkable wonder is not that so many have failed, but rather that so many have been skilled and scrappy enough to survive. It's good news, too, in the sense that policy is something we control. We can opt to end the favoritism and enact policies that better reflect the economic and community value of locally owned businesses. This resolution does exactly that. It's a big step in the right direction of enacting policies that better reflect the economic and community value of locally owned businesses. And I want to thank all of you for boldly moving forward on this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, all of you.
Thank you, folks.
Martin Medeiros, Ken Turner, and Ethan Dunham. Are you going to use your really good line, Martin?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. He's got a great line. Tell us. No, I can't wait. Go ahead.
Don't steal my thunder. My name is Martin Medeiros. I am an employer of a small business owner of a six-person law firm in the American Bank building on Pioneer Court Ash Square. I'm a member of the Small Business Advisory Council, and I'm a citizen budget advisor as well. I'd like to thank the commissioners for giving me this opportunity and attention to a critical problem facing the city, and that problem is unemployment, generally. But I want to especially draw your attention to how we employ people in the city. In 1975, less than 20% of the market capitalization, how we value businesses, of the S&P 500 was attributable to what we call intellectual property. These are patents, copyrights, trade secrets, know-how, show-how, customer lists, knowing your customer, intangible things, essentially. Last year, that number was closer to 80%. So in America, and indeed in Portland, intangibles, intellectual property, makes up the value of the business. That is what employs people. Brains are valued over steel. Portland is losing its innovative and creative people, those who create value, those that create intellectual property. Of course, this includes scientists, doctors, architects, artists, authors, accountants, entertainers, but it also includes retailers of goods, services, foods, chefs, and capital. Our future depends on innovation and creativity. These creative entities tend to be small, yet they are saddled with a large tax burden the city has, and that is the BIT-BLF, or as one court in 1950 called it, or determined it to be, an excise tax. I think it's unfair, and it penalizes small creative entities. This restriction on the liberal flow of capital is why companies like Northwest Technology Ventures, Cascade Partners, and many others have moved out of the city. These are exactly the same people that will create clean and efficient energy sources, Randy, new therapies for the sick.
You have to say bio something.
better buildings to live on, and a brighter future for our children. But if you are not persuaded by these anecdotal facts, maybe the federal statistics will help. Oregon is poor and getting poorer. Today's news in the Oregonian shows that the statewide bond rating, different from the Portland's bond rating, is the third lowest in the country at AA-, shows that this is an issue. A second economic tidbit is the per capita income for individuals, according to the Bureau of Economic Analysis, that shows poverty again. The gap between the national average per capita income in Oregon and the national average shows a widening gap, with Oregon below the national average, and that gap has widened in the last 8 years. Oregon at large will increasingly look to Portland to subsidize the local needs that result from per capita income declines, as you can see in the statewide legislature in the last session. The second indicator I want to draw your attention to is unemployment itself, and Sam had this in his presentation. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, not only has Portland lost employment, but the surrounding areas has gained employment. We are losing jobs to businesses outside of the city and outside the state. And I want policy makers, the council, to look at one more final indicator that shows Portland to be a brain colony.
That's the word.
This indicator of creativity and innovation is a number, the number of U.S. patents issued versus number of U.S. patents assigned. Those who control the patent generally control its economic destiny. These tend to be the assignees. The good news is that patents issued to Oregonians and Portlanders are up. The bad news is that a significant portion of those who are innovating here in Portland are assigning their patents outside the city and outside the state. The income generated from those patents is tax revenue we will never see. We will never see that revenue. It's innovated here. Someone else controls it. Someone else enjoys the treasure of our brains. Sound familiar? And the ratio of patents issued to patents assigned is getting worse, particularly in Portland. So we are retaining less. And those statistics, PSU intern helped us compile that data. Why? Because we turn creative and innovative people away by taxing service companies, innovators, artists, shopkeepers, small businesses unfairly higher than other businesses. In Washington State, the opposite is true. What is innovated in Washington, by and large, stays in Washington. This is very different than what happens here in Oregon. Some have criticized Commissioner Adams' proposal as too little, too late, noting that if adjusted for inflation from that 1975 number, the owner's compensation deduction should be closer to $165,000. But I say the city's creative engine may be dead before such dream reform, such as elimination of the tax, is practical. Employment is happiness, according to a recent article in The Economist. Doing gives dignity and purpose. Invigorating our intellectual economy is essential in today's world to provide jobs of all types. But what about schools? We must fund all levels of schools, but I want a footnote to this component of the intellectual economy, which the two buckets are K through 12 and higher ed. A study in England asked the question, what helped boost the economy faster, K through 12 funding or higher ed? And it concluded that actually higher ed wins because many reasons, and I don't think the study actually got into that, but we can hypothesize parents, graduates want their kids, they demand more of the schools. They have a passion for their discipline, and graduates have to service college debt. It is these new graduates who start businesses and try to create unemployment that the BIT-BLF disfavors. These are the entrepreneurs that get out there. Napoleon dismissed Britain's will to fight, calling England, quote, a nation of shopkeepers. In a place called Trafalgar, Napoleon was shown that it was the liberal flow of ideas, capital, and labor that made people care. The business income tax is unfair. It is a restraint on the free flow of ideas, capital, and labor, and it encourages unemployment. Ironically, a growing economy that will result in this liberalization will increase city revenues in the long term, and some argue closer to the near term. Economic growth is essential to the strategic vision of this city. So the commissioners can choose to do one of two things. The wrong thing, which is do nothing and enjoy higher unemployment, underfunded schools, and discourage creative works and ownership. Or the second thing, the right thing, if you do not feel you can eliminate all the unfair injustices of the tax, then fully support Commissioner Adams' intelligent proposal and quickly move into the later phases of that proposal as we get the data and can make an informed decision. Thank you very much for your time, and I'll leave a copy of my comments and a lot of data on a lot of other stuff beyond the scope of what I can talk about today with the clerk.
Thanks, Martin.
My name is Ethan Dunham. I'm the past chair of the Small Business Advisory Council. I'm here today just to make some brief comments in support of Commissioner Adams' resolution. I'd like to commend Mayor Potter and the commissioners for their leadership and courage in helping us all work together to get here today. I think we have an opportunity to take a step toward fairness in the city business income taxes. One of the best things about this that we have heard, and I have heard in my volunteering over the last 4 years on this issue, is that we need to recognize that taxes ought to be paid by those who have the ability to pay them. If we go out into the city, that appears among business people to be the number one gripe. How come those guys downtown don't pay anything and I'm out here struggling on 82nd and paying? We have a chance to, an opportunity to eliminate that. perception. This city of Portland is a wonderful place to live and raise a family, and most of us who are here today have been able to participate in all of the wonderful things that this city offers, including its prosperity. But we shouldn't forget those who don't participate in that prosperity, because it's what pays for the education for our children, our housing, our sustenance, and our medical care. And to help more people participate in prosperity is something we should all do and all work together. So these reforms of the business income tax carries with it direct financial support for those who can use it most. It's good government. Those self-employed and small businesses are struggling to make it. In many cases, these same people would be unemployed or underemployed were they not running their own businesses. So when we support merging small businesses, we're all working toward making Portland a business-friendly city. And even more significantly, remember that we're also doing the good work of government by reducing the amount of fees and taxes that businesses pay and moving it or shifting that burden to those who can pay. That's the American way. So business people understand that. So we're helping small business people and families pay living wages, provide health care, and become full participants in this great city. Thank you.
Thanks, Ethan.
Mr. Mayor, Council, it's a pleasure for me to be here speaking on this issue today because I've been involved with it for several years, more years than we really should have to admit, and have gone through several of the presentations of Commissioner Adams. I'm in.
Just longer.
Which is worse.
Doesn't sound like you're bragging.
He's not.
I'm here on behalf of the Small Business Advisory Committee. Also, I chair the 82nd Avenue of Roses Business District, member of the APNBA, and the East Portland Chamber of Commerce, all small business entities. I also manage Eastport Plaza Shopping Center, the home of dozens of small businesses that also operate on the same site as with the big box, so we can work together. On behalf of SBAC, though, I would like to state its support for Commissioner Adams' proposed BIT-BLF reform. The SBAC has been involved in this dialogue regarding reforms since the SBAC's inception and sees this proposal as an opportunity to bring much-needed reforms to the current business tax fee structure. The BIT-BLF has been operating nearly 30 years without significant reform, and this has resulted in an unfair distribution of the tax burden. Portland had a very different business population in the 1970s when the law was first written. As a result of this lack of reform, business fees and taxes are assessed based on type of business, not on the ability to pay that tax. The following excerpt from Commissioner Adams' research illustrates this point, and I quote, "Our analysis showed that based on a 2004 business survey, professional service firms paid the highest BLF charge of $449 per employee. Transportation and warehousing businesses paid the least at $75 per employee." Again, quoting, "We uncovered the fact that in tax year 2004, the last year for which the tax data is available, 2,658 firms with gross receipts over $1 million paid only $100 in BLF charges, including 920 firms that have gross receipts of more than $20 million. The SBAC sees Commissioner Adams' proposal as a good starting point, and we look forward to working with City Council on developing additional BIT-BLF reforms. Specifically, SBEC supports the increase of gross receipts from $25,000 to $50,000, which will help the thousands of Martin's shopkeepers in Portland. This will be a tremendous support to them. And increase the owner's compensation deduction from $60,000 to $80,000, with the express intention of raising it to $125,000 within 5 years. The passage of this reform measure, you know, is based on several reasons, but a few of them are it's just a matter of fairness, as has been spoken to before. It makes good economic sense, as has been spoken to before, because it encourages businesses not only to